it's time to listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you by Island, stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them in Ocean View Road, Oneroa. Last Saturday, I talked to Jay Clark from the Gulf District Plan Association, Hauraki Gulf Islands Councillor Denise Roach, Margaret Johnson and Teresa Littlejohn from the Waiheke Travelling Books Project, the opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone, Daughter Ray from the Waiheke Waste Resource Trust, and Rebecca Armstrong from the Waiheke Coast Guard. First up, Jay Clark. You would have seen in the news this week a story there about the Gulf District Planning Association. Now, Waiheke's got no shortage of groups who are prepared to jump up and have a say about development and the way that our island operates. There's any number of them. We've got WICPAG and WICPEG and does anyone remember the Citizens and People of Waiheke? Any number of them. But the Gulf District Planning Association is a little different because it has a long-standing history. It's been around for a while, but in recent times it's found itself in a little bit of hot water. But I've got the secretary of the association here with me this morning, Jay Clark. How are you, Jay? Well, just hold on. We've just got a problem with your microphone there, Jay, which isn't working for some reason. Yeah, we've got everything fixed and going now, so now we can talk to Jay. So, Jay Clark from the Gulf District Planning Association. And, Jay, you were just going to tell us a little bit about some of the recent issues and the problems that the association has found itself in.
Well, our current problem is an inability to meet the requirements of the district, of the Environment Court. And normally we manage to negotiate with parties that we have difficulties with to see if we can't come to a resolution. On this occasion, we haven't been able to negotiate a satisfactory solution to this. And unfortunately, it's hit the headlines and it's not something we like to do because polarizing Waiheke community is the last thing we want to do. We prefer to work together if we can to solve problems. But we are going to be tested now, it seems, not of our desire. We wish to at least talk to the people. We haven't had an opportunity to talk to the developer in this situation. The developer has refused and only speaks to us through their solicitors, so it makes it very difficult. So we're going to have to employ legal counsel because we can't even speak to the High Court. We've been taken to the High Court on this instance, so we can't even speak to the High Court as lay people. So we're actually having to fund a lawyer, and at the moment we don't have the funds to fund the lawyer because we don't have the funds to fund the debt that's been imposed upon us by the Environment Court. So we're in a bit of a catch-22 there, where you, as ordinary people, don't have the money to be able to speak in the courts to show the courts that you're doing your best to resolve a situation. So it's all very difficult, and as I said, we didn't wish it to go to the public, but it now seems to be that we're going to have to. So our aim is now to raise the funds so that we can have our day in court and show the judge in the High Court that we are good, honest citizens here in Waiheke. We pay our debts if we've got debts to pay. We do it if we can by time payment, and we've done that before. And we just hope that the High Court will see that we are just ordinary people wanting to pay our debts, but we can't pay them all at once. God, Lehman Brothers having a difficulty in the United States, and government supports all these big problems. Well, we've got the same on Waiheke. People have less money, pay more commuting fees, they make more rates, more rents, rubbish and all that sort of thing. So
the background to all of this, isn't it, that you were objecting to a proposed development that went through the Environment Court process, and the court decided that the development could go ahead, and you were awarded, or costs were awarded against the association. Isn't that right?
In a nutshell, that's correct. We won the day in terms of the hearings on this matter. This is Corey Road, and it's the iconic lookout at Corey Road looking around Palm Beach, and a large house, second house in the Greenbelt, was proposed. The local residents, about 100, 150 local residents, thought this was not a good idea, and they called upon GDP. GDP is like a neighbourhood support. We're a group of people who've lived on the island, got various skills, and when anyone's in trouble, they either go to the CAB and ask for help at the CAB, or the CAB refer them on to us. And most of us have got some sort of legal or business training, and usually we can help ordinary folk to find a way of either rationalizing the problem they have with their neighbor, or if necessary, sorting it out legally. And so we give our time voluntarily, like just the radio station here does. So we're just ordinary people who go about our daily work, but occasionally we help where we can. It's a neighborhood legal law support group, and so we help these people, but we do one step more than most neighborhood law support groups do. We actually provide some cover for them in the terms of an incorporated society. And it's that society that's called Gulf District Plan at the moment, which is set up because it's short for the Hauraki Gulf District Plan Association. It was set up when the district plan was finally confirmed in 1996. And to celebrate the work we did for that for 6 years on behalf of the community, we thought we'd better give ourselves an incorporated society name so that if there were any challenges to that district plan, then there would be a body that was used to working with the Environment Court. And we've had some wonderful judges say some wonderful things about GDP, and that's why we think GDP is worth keeping, because the Chief Environment Court Judge, John Shepherd, and Shona Kendadine and others have written us letters of testimony saying this is a well-organized, well-funded group that attends Environment Courts and gives good submissions and helps do what the Resource Management Act is supposed to do, and that's measure the effects as assessed by the developer who wants to do something and the community and the receiving environment. So our job is just to make sure there's two sides to every case is heard and debated.
Mm. Now, in this case, the reason that costs were awarded, the judge said, well, you know, there was a possibility of a negotiated outcome and that you hadn't wanted to pursue that line, and that's why there was the awarding of costs. So, I mean, there must be a balance for the association when you're addressing an issue of going, well, you know, do we go for a compromise here or do we continue to push it? So how do you make those judgments?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, and I wasn't in the Environment Court presenting our case. We employ others to do that for us. And so we had been negotiating with Auckland City Council, with the developer, over 2 years. And these 2 years of negotiations, again, it's all free on the part of the community that takes time out, like I'm doing this morning, from our family to come and talk to whichever group we're asked to talk to. And the Environment Court judge on the last day of the hearing said, I believe, to our legal counsel, is there a middle way through here? Is there a way that this house can be brought back and lowered into the landscape, or is it possible to, looking at the developer, I guess, not build your building here at all and put it somewhere less obvious? And apparently they couldn't find a way of doing that. And the judge hadn't been to the site himself, and so he wasn't in a way to do anything. So if you like, it was a way of seeing if there was any other possible negotiation. So our legal representative said from their point of view, from the community point of view, they believed in what the commissioners had said at the original hearing. The commissioners at the original hearing said, no, they should not go ahead. Auckland City Council negotiated with the developer, and they came to a solution which wasn't acceptable to the community. So the community said, we're not happy with this. The independent commissioner said it shouldn't be there. Auckland City Council is now supporting the developer into the Environment Court, leaving the community left to talk to the community, to the Environment Court, and say, this isn't what we think we've wanted for that Quarry Road end, the Greenbelt part of Palm Beach. So we were just telling the Environment Court what the other point of view was. The developer employed their landscape architects and their planners and their lawyers, and we had one person, and Colin Bearden, you may have heard Professor Colin Bearden, he was speaking as one of the residents, I believe, at Quarry Road, saying that they didn't believe this was a good idea. So when the judge asked on the last day, does GDP think this is reasonable, our legal representative, representing, if you like, hundreds of people behind him, how could he make a decision on the drop of a moment? So he said, I don't think we can. You know, we've come here to say this development in the way it is at the moment is inappropriate. Ironically, the judge then continued to modify the application, and the decision was a decision with conditions. In other words, the judge had listened to GDP, listened to our legal arguments, and had, I presume, decided to modify the plans even further. So it's ironic then that we get challenged to pay half the fees of the developer, And then what is even worse is that the judge has awarded a 50% of those fees against us. Normally in the courts, if someone asks for costs, you get awarded 10%. Really, 10-15% is the usual. So if you're wrong in a court and you hadn't had a good representation and it was vexatious and time wasting, then you might get 10-15% of your costs back from that party. So we were awarded a punitive 50% of $40,000. Then the judge said, and this will be collected through the district court. And so we can't understand why the developer wants to take us to the high court, where we can't represent ourselves. In the district court we can, so we can talk to the judge face to face and say, this is the situation, these are our accounts, these are our books, this is what we have money for, this is what we're fundraising for. We've already fundraised almost half of that over the period of the next 5-10 years.
So what's the size of the association? I mean, you have to have 15 people, but have you got more than that?
Well, we range. We're not a residents' association which has a hall and dancers. We're not a bowling club. We're not a golf club. We're a neighbourhood law support advisory group. So depending upon the issue, the people join up for that issue. So as I said at the beginning, it's about 100, 150 people were interested in the Quarry Road development plan. So we take money from them, or they fundraise themselves and do what they can.
And what's the legal liability of those members? I mean, have you contemplated just winding the thing up and disappearing?
Oh, sure, it's easy to do, and that is no trouble. There's no legal liability. We conduct our affairs properly, so there's no problem there. But I think the reason why the developer wants us to fold up and why the developer wants their pound of flesh, and as you know, Shylock in Merchant of Venice didn't get his pound of flesh, is because we have half a dozen other campaigns going on at the moment. Mr. Spencer, for instance, is wanting to develop his property out at Ofiti Bay and Cactus Bay. GDP are the submitters for that. GDP are submitters on the marina, for instance, submitters on all sorts of things that are going on that many people, including Auckland City Council, would like to see GDP disappear, because we have legal standing in all these issues. We've got 20 or 30 issues going on at the moment. Most of them are well below the radar, and that's the way we think it's good to keep them below the radar, to keep ordinary people talking with developers to see if we can't get a win-win for everybody. So our aim is to have the sustainable development, if I can use that word, where people can continue to enjoy living where they live. And it's a shame that Auckland City Council, we've got a three-story building on the end of Onatangi Beach. Next time you're on Onatangi Beach and you look at the western end on the Palm Beach end, you see a three-story house there. That was illegally built about 10, 15 years ago. Auckland City Council notified that in 2000 this year, so it's 9 years ago, for public comment. And because they have got some difficulties with that case, they would love us to disappear as well. So there are many issues. Auckland City Council would like to get rid of GDP, so we think there's a lot more to it than just this one developer. Oh,
it's worth the fight to stick around.
Indeed, indeed.
Right. Okay, now if people would like to help out or become involved with some of those issues, how do they get involved with the association, Jay?
Well, we've got an email address, and that's gdp@extra.co.nz. And my phone number for the secretary is 372-6388, 372-6388. And we have a bank account at the ASB, and if people wish to make donations direct to that bank account at ASB, they can contact me and I'll send them the numbers, but I've got the numbers of that account somewhere with me today.
And we'll give out those phone numbers and email address later on in the show, so if you didn't have a pen, you can jot those down. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, and when's your day in court?
We believe we're on about 10th of December.
All right, so you're a bit nervous, maybe.
Yeah.
I think I would be. Okay, thanks very much. That's Jay Clark from the Gulf District Plan Association joining us here on Island Life. Welcome along to Denise Roach, the Hauraki Gulf Islands Councillor. Good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
All right. So, you know, council's always a busy time, and I imagine at the moment always a fraught time.
Yeah, it is, really.
Yeah, and we're still in the midst of the ongoing process of moving towards the establishment of the super city and how that's all going to work. And lots of islanders have been involved with that. Of course, we've had the submissions about the super city itself. We've had the submissions about the role of local boards, which many people went down to the dunes and submitted on. And the current thing up for consultation is a look at how the wards will operate. So we know now that we're not going to have these at-large councillors. We're going to have ward councillors, but we don't know the configuration of the wards or even how many councils in each, do we?
No, we don't actually. The Local Government Commission is going to bring out a proposal that they'll draw up and send out for submissions on, and they'll release that on the 20th of November. So that's the time where we actually have to start putting in submissions, and it's a really short process. It's only 3 weeks to get stuff in. And they won't be hearing people in person either. So I'm really concerned about the lack of democracy around this, with the whole process, really. It's just been mad.
So what's driving that, do you think? I mean, is it that, I mean, because it seemed like the earlier part, the submissions, well, they'd certainly be listening very hard. I mean, people felt they got a good hearing when they went down to Onitangi and submitted down there.
Oh, absolutely. The what's driving it, that the speed, is actually the national government's decision that they want this in place by October next year. I think in the previous amalgamation, I think it was a 5-year bid, and but this is like, nah, we're going to do it within a year, and that's just crazy. It is crazy because people are so far behind understanding what's going on that that then, you know, it takes time to bed in the education about what people should be thinking about. And you know, I get worried about people who just don't understand it at all. And, you know, that's a reasonable response. It is very, very complicated. So, you know, if you don't take the time to educate people, then you don't get any sort of democracy around it, because you don't actually have people who understand it.
So at the moment we have, you're the councillor for the Hauraki Gulf Islands. So we have a ward that covers that. You can take that unique perspective, you know, encompassing the geographic isolation of the islands and all of those infrastructure issues that aren't faced by other parts of the city. In the super city, I suppose it's looking unlikely that there would be a ward or a council representative solely for that area, isn't it?
Yeah, it is looking unlikely. I mean, the parameters that the Local Government Commission is using is to basically take that 1.4 million people across the entire region, that will be the super city, and then divide that by about 20, which would be the 20 councillors, and then attach those councillors, possibly attach those councillors to a ward. So they're looking at wards of between 66 and 76,000 people, which actually is much larger than the electorates that we have for the central elections. Waiheke, of course, and Great Barrier and all the rest of the Hauraki Gulf Islands, if you add up our population, you're looking at around about 9,500. So it's very unlikely that we'll get our own councillor and be a ward on our own. And if you combine that with the fact that Great Barrier believe that there's more advantage for them to be combined with the Central Business District, for example, then we're starting to be pushing uphill against a real trend. That's not to say it's not impossible, though, because it was thought impossible that Waiheke and Great Barrier would have their own ward in the last amalgamations, because we are the smallest in the Auckland City area currently.
So what's the feeling against the continuation of that? I mean, why aren't, I mean, it seems as though the Barrier Community Board aren't pushing for a Gulf Islands ward.
Basically, they're a lot more strategic in the way they operate with council than Waiheke is, for example. But they're actually saying, because they've got a population of about 800 people, or 830 people, the rate space doesn't actually add up to what the council spends on them. And that because the CBD is a much sort of richer area, and because it's so very different from Great Barrier, like we are different from Great Barrier, that there would be more sympathy towards the kind of massive infrastructure projects that they need on the island to sustain the air economy for tourism. Those are things like the airports, the roads and the wharves, and those are multi-million dollar projects.
So the other options, apart from the central city, that have been mooted are Rodney and North Shore, kind of Devonport area, aren't they?
Yeah. There are. The local government commission's looking at a range of different criteria about, combining communities of interest. And I think they're probably more likely, just, you know, if I was a betting woman, I'd say that they're more likely to go with the CBD isthmus, Western Bays or Eastern Bays, to sort of add up to a population base of 70,000 or so. But the other kind of criteria that they're looking at is communities of interest that are kind of aligned. And I think, you know, we've got a similar kind of feel to Devonport. Then we do have to say Kohimarama.
Okay, so take us through the options, your priority order from the best outcome to the worst.
Okay, best outcome, Waiheke goes alone, has its own councillor. Next one is probably, you know, a community of interest that's similar, which could be Devonport or Waitakere, although I think the geographical links is probably a bit difficult with that one. Third option is, and it's not a bad option, is CBD and Western Bays. And the one that I would absolutely hate for personal reasons more than anything would be Waiheke goes with CBD and Eastern Bays, because then we're getting into Aaron Batniger territory.
Okay,
who's
so
despised by many on the island.
And now there's been a little bit of heat generated over the last week or so, because there's, well, I suppose, differing points of view about what perspective should be put about the island's preferences between you and the community board.
Yeah, it wasn't really about that so much. no, I mean, we pretty much agreed that those are the preferences that we're hearing from people. The issue was over working with the community and getting an organising education program together between now and when the submissions are due for the local government commission. So I'd called a public meeting about this because I didn't believe that the community board was acting in a way that was consultative with our community, and in fact, you know, I wanted to make sure that we were on the right page if we were saying that this is the way we should be going. I was a bit surprised by the meeting, actually, because I had really wanted to say, well, I think we should try and wrestle the best outcome we can with going with the Western Bays and CBD, but there was a very strong and adamant move that we should first off go for going it alone and having our own ward councillor. The community board's had lots of ability to give their opinions to the local government commission and basically failed to do so effectively. Eileen Evans, bless you, basically right off the cuff was expected to say to the local government commission what it was that our island community wanted. And she did come through with those three options, and she did it quite well, but there had been no discussion as a community board before that, and we had 2 weeks to get our act together before that meeting. And then following that meeting with the local government commission, which was with all the community boards in the Auckland City area, there was the opportunity for us to put in a written submission, and that's why I called the public meeting. And the community board didn't discuss it at all, and the community board did not put in a submission.
Mm. And do you know why?
No.
Right. And I should.
I know why they didn't support my one.
Right.
I think there was a bit of because there were, I mean, I drafted it up after the meeting, sent it out, and called a few, a whole bunch of people from that public meeting were happy to assist me. I sent it to the community board, basically outlining that these are the reasons why we want our own ward. And, Tony Sears, the chairman, didn't actually get to look at it till 5 o'clock on the day before it was due.
Right, and then he wasn't prepared to support it going in. And I should explain at this point, I did try to get hold of Tony to come on and talk about this as well, and haven't been able to hear from him, but I'm sure he'll get a chance to talk about this at some point on the station as well. So, yeah, okay, so where does that leave us now? So we've got no submission made from the community board. Does that mean, well, we've become invisible, we've lost that opportunity, or is there still a chance to have a say on those issues?
There will be a chance for the community board to put in a submission once that proposal is out by the local government commission. This was the submissions that I was putting in, and I think WIPIG, you know, they put in a submission as well, was an attempt to, it was the opportunity to influence the thinking of the local government commission. And the community board had the opportunity to hold a lot of sway with them, and they missed it. And, yeah, I still remain deeply distressed by that. So a lot of it's down to personality stuff, I think. Some of the community board members who were at the public meeting felt that they'd been attacked, but in fact they were criticised, and it was relevant criticism. About lack of leadership and lack of consultation. And, you know, sadly, this is what they're showing. However, on the more positive side, there will be a public forum that Tony says is called for the 3rd of December to talk about the issue, which is during the submission period. So, you know, they have taken on board some issues around consulting with the community about this.
So I suppose the thing that the people of Waiheke need to know now is how deep is this, well, I mean, is it a rift? Is it a disagreeance? What's the ongoing working relationship between our councillor and our board?
Probably much the same as it's always been, really. We disagree on how we do things. Well, I disagree. Let's try it that way. I disagree on how we do things, and we just keep plugging away. I mean, my criticism is that our board lacks strategy, and I had hoped that, you know, my background as an organiser and educator could have been useful to the board, but clearly there are some issues there that they're not willing to pick up. So I'll just keep popping, you know, carrying on. I feel that I must be accountable to the board for what I'm doing, and I do that. So we'll just keep plugging along. I don't believe it's not really personal in some ways. They're all good people. We're all trying our best. So it's not personality stuff. It's kind of just like, you know, how we do things. So we'll just keep plugging away. We've got another year till the next elections. So, we'll just keep plugging away. And you know, the board is having some achievements. So, yeah, we'll just keep going.
Okay, so December the 3rd for that meeting, and as I say, we'll try to get Tony Sears in to have a talk about this at some point as well. And obviously you can contact Denise with your thoughts about what should happen around that ward proposal, and you'll find her pretty easily. You can email her, it's what, cr.roach, isn't it?
Yeah, R-O-C-H-E.
Yeah.
At aucklandcity.govt.nz. Or you can phone me, I'm in the phone book.
Yep, easy. Good stuff. That's the beauty of having your local councillor. You just see her at the supermarket.
Yeah, well, that is the issue about having a councillor who's attached to a much larger ward. But that's where the local boards are supposed to step up and do the may.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Denise Roach, councillor for the Hauraki Gulf Islands, joining us here on Waiheke Radio. You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke people, events and issues, brought to you by Island. Art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Ocean View Road, Onirua. It's time to talk about the Waiheke Travelling Books Initiative, which is going to launch very, very soon. And I've got with me Margaret Johnson. How are you, Margaret?
I'm good, thank you, Chris.
Okay, we'll just pull you in a bit closer there.
Sure.
And we've also got, this is an experiment, I don't know if this is going to work, Teresa Littlejohn.
Hello.
Okay, say hello again, Teresa.
Hello.
Oh, good, we got you. Uh-huh. Fantastic. Okay, and Margaret and Teresa are both, we'll just need you a bit closer to that microphone as well, Teresa. Okay, so Margaret and Teresa are involved with the Waiheke Travelling Books Initiative, and I like this idea, and our opinionated islander Alex Stone is up next, and I'm sure he likes this idea as well. So tell us a little bit about what it is and what's involved with it all.
Well, basically, it's an initiative to try and get the wider community involved in reading, maybe even reaching people who wouldn't normally go to a library or that sort of thing, and basically just to surprise your reader by finding books in a place that you wouldn't normally, say, bus stops, cafes, park benches. And we are hoping to get together at least 200 books that we're going to tag and release, so to speak, on Waiheke in the aforesaid places. So if you find one, count yourself really lucky. And these will all be labelled with a sticker saying, basically, we're not lost, we're waiting to be found, take me home, borrow me, read me, look after me, and then take me back to another public place so that the next potential reader can find it.
Fantastic. And so this is all about encouraging reading. So I imagine you're trying to have a whole range of different books and so on.
We absolutely are. And we're inviting donations at the moment. If anybody has got any good quality secondhand books they're prepared to part with, Waiheke Adult Literacy Travelling Books Group would be more than happy to take them off your hands. They can be dropped to the Community Education Centre, which is at 11 Donald Bruce Road, Surfdale, or you can phone the Waiheke Community Education Centre and we can always pick them up.
Okay, and Teresa, what's the reason, you know, how, why did you come to be involved with this? What motivated you all to do this?
Well, I think as students, it was a project that was given to us, but we've taken it on wholeheartedly, and it's just an amazing feeling being involved in something that, you know, people are actually going to get excited about and find these books and read these books and pass these books on, and we just want to see, you know, how far it goes, and...
Okay, and
yeah, we're wanting children's books as well too, because that way it's sort of a whole family thing.
And how do the mechanics of it work? So you've got all these books lying around. You've got them all in plastic bags, or what?
They
happens?
Will be in plastic bags. We're also inviting donations in plastic bags, please.
So you put them all in a Ziploc bag. They've got the sticker. You take it home, have a read, and then put it back.
That's exactly it. And we're really excited about it because we're not sure how far afield our books may go. This sort of initiative has been done before. But never on Waiheke as far as we're aware. And we're just going to be excited to see how far the books go. We're in the process of setting up a Facebook site. We're having a few teething problems with doing that, but we'll get there in the end with some possible advice from your good wife and have a Facebook site so that we can see a bit of feedback from readers who, you know, might find it fun to go in and comment on either what they thought of the book or what they thought of the idea of Waiheke Travelling Books.
Or even where the book is at that present moment.
Yeah.
That would be fun, wouldn't it, to track them as they move around.
Absolutely.
And have you had a good response to the call for donations?
Well, Teresa did a really good initiative. She got in touch with some publishing houses and we had a fantastic big box turn up from Random House Publishers of brand new books, which is really nice to get some brand new books as well as the second-hand ones in.
Oh, that's good to hear. And the public have been coming through as well, have they?
Oh, the public have been amazing so far. And we've got a lovely pile of books there at the moment, but we're always, you know, hoping for more.
Okay, and you said people can drop these off at community education. And when does it all kick off?
They can drop them off to Community Education or phone Community Education on 372 9868 or Angie Ball on 372 9555. And the books could be picked up in case people have got a problem with transport.
Yeah,
in case they're donating big boxes of books.
And are you having a big launch when you're going to go out and drop these all off around the island, or will it just kind of incrementally start?
Well, we're incrementally trying to get the public more aware. We've got an advertisement called A Page in the Gulf News this week, so that we're hoping to sort of have a countdown with 4 weeks to go, 3 weeks to go, popping posters up around the community. But we're also going to have a stall at the Austin Market on the 3rd of December, and people could drop their books to that if they wanted to, or just basically get visualise the girls. We're hoping to have our T-shirts printed by then so that the public can see us in our T-shirts. So we've got the market stall on the 3rd of December, and we're going to go on the Santa Parade, which is on the 5th of December, and basically wheelbarrow down the main street with loads of books and probably give a few out, even though that's not a launch date, just give a few out so people can see what we're doing. And on the actual launch date, we're formulating our idea as we go, but we're sort of thinking of a really public place like Metiatia Wharf and the commuter rush hour in the morning, perhaps moving to Oniroa before we split up and all diverge out and head to those parks, barbecues, spots around the island where we can leave books.
So once you've got all these out there, then how do you maintain it from there? Because, you know, you have that launch, you put them all out, and then you're kind of waiting to see what happens. Will you be continually feeding new books in, and you've got your Facebook idea, obviously, to track them, but what happens from then on in?
We're hoping we will be able to keep the momentum going. We are unsure yet because it's a completely unfunded initiative. We're basically doing it on goodwill and our own initiative, and so far that's seeing us getting pretty good progress. But we're at the moment a bit feeling like it's our baby and we're going to be releasing it out there, and then how will we know? Which is why we came up with the Facebook idea, so that we had a way at least of maybe tracking them a little bit and seeing where a book may have ended up. Because otherwise, you know, then there's a chance too that people will take them home and you'll never see them again. You never know.
I think that might happen with the children's books a bit. But, well, I mean, that's good, having them in the homes
too. Mm. Which, yeah, but
and I suppose it can have a long life, can't it? I mean, you know, a book may go into a home and 2 years later emerge out for someone else to read.
Well, exactly. I mean, this thing, it's not going to end. These books, they're travelling books. They've got the stickers on them. They're just pretty much going to go on
ad infinitum.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea, and yeah, very exciting.
And the more the merrier.
Okay, and you're okay with businesses coming along and saying, look, we'd like to donate some books and put our name of our business and stuff on as well?
Absolutely, they would be thanked publicly. That would be fantastic.
Good stuff. Oh, well, I think it's a fantastic idea.
Like Random House. Thank you, Random House.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And I've got a pile of music magazines you can have if you like.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. So that's brilliant. That's Margaret Johnson and Teresa Littlejohn from the Waiheke Travelling Books Initiative. Get down to community education, and I'll just grab those phone numbers again from you. So you can phone 372 9868 or 372 9555, and you can support that and get in behind it. Wonderful idea. It's the first Saturday of the month, and it's my pleasure, as always, to welcome to the studio the opinionated Islanders. We've got Alan Knight. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
And Alex Stone.
How are you? How are you?
I'm good. I'll turn you down a little bit there, Alex.
Okay.
Exuberant as ever. All right. So, welcome along to both of you. Good to catch up again.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Now, we've a week of festivity, really. We've had, in the past week, as we do this time every year, had Halloween and Guy Fawkes.
Yes. What is wrong with Halloween these days? I got all organised last Saturday night. I had lollies, lots and lots of lollies, and I've still got them all. Not one single trick-or-treater came around. And, I think this is pretty shameful.
Yeah. I'm wondering if it's the safety culture that's invaded. You know, you see parents walking around with kids now, and it all seems a bit tame and weak these
days.
Yes.
Or it's the fact that, you know, this being Waiheke, a lot of parents are making their kids stay home, eat their tofu, and think about climate change. and, you know, work on their sense of guilt over that, rather than letting them out and actually having fun. But, you know, and if one more person says, oh, we don't like Halloween because it's too American, I may not be responsible for my actions. No, for result, it was the Scots who invented Halloween.
Oh, good on the Scots.
The Americans have just been looking after it for us for a while, and they've made a lovely job of it.
Yeah, but I think that's a point, Alan. The way we do Halloween in New Zealand is a pale, watered-down version of the American commercialised Halloween.
Well, true. It's yes, you do get kids dressed up as fairies and little cuddly bunny
rabbits. But outfits from the warehouse, you know, plastic witches and things, yeah.
Yes, there's supposed to be sort of fangs and claws and fur and entrails.
I think we could do scary stuff.
There isn't enough of it.
I think we could do scary really well in New Zealand. When you think of that movie, The River Queen, there's a lot of scary in that. And for me, there's some pretty scary stuff. My most scary thing is if you drive to the mountain at night and you come into the little town of Taumarunui, which is like real deliverance. There's a river and there's this little sleepy town with pubs and coal smoke and stuff. And you arrive in Taumarunui at night and there's a neon sign of a warrior with a full moko. I mean, this is scary, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could translate that kind of scary into our version of Halloween, I mean, I could see little groups of kids doing huckers on the fence and ripping things apart. I mean, it'd be pretty damn good.
Mm. But, I mean, you know, we've got to ask ourselves at the end of the day, is it a good idea to turn kids loose dressed as monsters and fill them up with sugar? And the answer, of course, is yes.
Yeah, why not? Yeah,
it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Plus, the other thing about Halloween, which you've really got to love, is that it annoys so many people who deserve to be annoyed. You get your po-faced liberals don't like it because it's too American, and you get your high sphincter-toned god-botherer types don't like it because, well, those kind of people don't really like anything that doesn't fit their narrow worldview.
And I think so, it gives the old curmudgeon something to curmudge about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, why not? It's thoroughly annoying to a lot of people, and I just feel honour-bound to support that kind of thing. Mm. And that followed by which, less than a week later, we've got a celebration which involves vast explosions, and also serves the useful purpose of clearing up one or two idiots out of the gene pool every year. You know, the kind of people who try to sort of
hold the rockets.
Yeah, holding rockets or trying to eat them while lighting them or putting them up their bottoms and things like that. Bye! We didn't need you in the gene pool anyway, so it's very, very useful stuff.
What's your take on Halloween, Alex? Oh, it's not Halloween, sorry, Guy Fawkes.
I think Ellen's right. It's what I like about it is it, because it commemorates a little bit of disobedience, you know. Waiheke should, you know, Guy Fawkes should be our patron saint. You know, he's the guy who wanted to stick it up to the Ponzi English, which is, it's as good, you know.
Actually, that's completely historically inaccurate.
Oh, well, what the hell? What did the Scots invent, Guy Fawkes as well?
No, of course not. He was not trying to blow up Parliament. He was trying to blow up the king.
Oh, well, that's even better.
Well, no, because James I was an okay king. And,
oh, but you, know, you want to blow up any old king, you know, that's what they're there for.
No, because the trouble was the gunpowder plot was supposed to bring the Catholic Church back in England,
and
it failed, so that was quite good. Where I grew up in the UK, down in the southeast, there's a town called Lewes out on the South Downs where they really do Guy Fawkes spectacularly. They close off the entire town, no vehicles, so it's all foot traffic in the town. Everyone dresses up as Vikings for some reason. I've never been able to figure out. They have huge bonfires, and never mind burning the proxy Guy Fawkes in effigy, they burn the Pope.
How good are they?
It really is quite full on and spectacular.
But once again, New Zealand could do Guy Fawkes really well. If you drive through the Waikato, where they've been clearing farmland, there are these huge bundles of dry wood. Have you seen them? They're huge.
No.
They're as big as a house.
I'm trying to remember the last time I went off the island. It was a very long time ago.
But these things are ready, set to, you know, strike a match, and you got a bonfire, and they're out in the middle of the paddock. You know, just perfect. That'd be the go.
And if you really wanted to be, you know, acknowledge and honour the true tradition of it, as just historically set out by Alan Knight, we did have one of the monarchy in New Zealand this week.
Yeah, bless his socks.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
One,
isn't he a bit underwhelming though?
Oh God, yes. Yeah, very. Yeah, no, very, very much. What's the old saying? If at first you don't succeed, you're probably the younger brother. And he really is a dull little chap, and he's going appallingly bald. He's going bald in that really sad way.
Well, the thing,
you know, some guys go elegantly bald.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking of myself.
Yeah, no, you've got to. With you, it's not so much an absence of hair; it's more a presence of head.
Yeah, whereas, well, I think you must do whatever. Challenges approach you in the world, whatever hurdles are there, you got to deal with them. Bit of humor, bit of smile, and he just seems to be a little po-faced.
Yes,
But he did award some certificates I saw during the week.
Oh, that was exciting!
Yeah. Somewhere in Mangere, he awarded some certificates to some earnest teenagers in Mangere. So good on him.
There was a time when someone visiting from the monarchy was a big deal.
Yes.
Yeah. What amazes me about the media in New Zealand is we kind of lose a lot of these opportunities. I mean, I bet you none of you know that 2 weeks ago the president of Hungary was in New Zealand.
And nobody, nope, I mean, news to me.
Yeah, that's like, it's funny. Like, who's ever heard of it? But it's a big country. It's got 10 million people. And he had lunch with my beloved. So there, you know, that's how I know about it. I wouldn't have known about it if I'd been relying on the media.
So what was he doing here? And what was the...
He came here because he thought New Zealand did good environmental stuff. So he was doing a fact-finding mission. Good on him. Him and his entourage of 20.
Well, fact-finding missions have got a bit of a bad name at the moment, don't they? With our favourite subject, the politicians, and we've got the double whammy this week with the Rodney Hyde and Honi Hararewera.
Yes. I think are we coming of age politically? We're having a political scandal every day. They should ration them, man.
It's great.
I can't keep up. Who's tomorrow?
Who cares? They are all scum. And this week just goes to prove it.
Did you see Honi's email last night?
Ooh. Not nice.
Yeah, I think it wasn't even funny. I mean, up till now, it's been quite funny.
But at least now, you know, we have the measure of the man. We've seen what he's made of.
I thought we had that already, yeah.
Well, no, we really do now. I mean, that was...
But the Rodney Hyde one gets me. I mean, have you, all the details coming out. They went to Disneyland or somewhere?
Yes, and apparently there's even more this morning. They went to Hawaii as well.
Yeah, and the wedding. Oh, I mean, the wedding's okay. Yes. But I'm worried about the sanity of this young woman because she's quite young. And, I mean, the fact that she has chosen Rodney as her as her intended, I think she could front the new mental health campaign or something. Who knows?
Oh, look, you know, whatever you might think of his politics, Rodney Hyde is a very nice man.
Oh, bless his socks.
You know, he's one of the few politicians that right now that I'd be actually quite upset if somebody put a bullet through him, whereas mostly, you know, I wouldn't care if somebody shot a lot of them.
Yeah, we always need the joke in the pack.
He's a nice man, but I'm very sorry that he's let everyone down so badly and let himself down. I mean, he was the greatest perk buster, and then to get caught so obviously with his snout in the trough, I think is a bit sad.
Yeah. What I've noticed about Rodney in just in the last few months, he's become very good at radio interviews. He used to be a bit strident and not listening and, you know, just punting his line, but he's listening to interviewers, answering the question, and he's developed a very reasonable tone.
Wouldn't fit in around here then, would he?
No.
Well, no.
But I even found myself agreeing with him the other day, which was quite a scary thought. That was Halloweenish.
Really?
You should have seen the look on these guys' faces. No, it was, he said the dog chipping laws needed review. And I always thought they were a bad law from the start. That was one of the big mistakes of Labour policy making, I thought.
Well, yes, it's, you know, it's again, it's this thing of throwing the baby out with the bathwater whenever you try to stop something happening. Naturally, the dog microchipping is only going to work for people who are going to behave themselves anyway. The people who are causing the problem still won't do it. Yeah. They'll get fined, they won't pay the fines, and... the whole thing just goes on.
This leads on to a wider thing. You know, the whole idea of unworkable laws works against government, because if you have laws that are unworkable and people defy them, and then the whole respect for law and law-abidingness, the lawmaker...
It brings the law into disrepute.
And what intrigued me was this last week has been the first week of the no cell phones in cars, and there was no big blitz. And a lot of people are very... you know, have an ingrained habit of cell phone, using the cell phone in cars, and they're still doing it. And I think they will continue to do it because there hasn't been a blitz. So that'll be another example of perhaps an unenforceable law.
Yeah. Another really annoying example this week was one of the news shows did a piece on Saturday night at the accident and emergency ward of a hospital, concentrating on people being brought in from the aftermath of binge drinking. And the whole point of it was to say, oh, you know, look, isn't alcohol bad? Now, okay, I do have a vested interest in this, obviously, as a brewer. But it seems to me, looking at the people they were bringing in, alcohol's not the problem here. These people were all incredibly stupid. And it wasn't the booze. You could tell all of these people were barely able to string a coherent thought together. Yeah, and so it's not a booze problem. It's a stupidity problem.
Yeah, but this is an ingrained thing. I wish you well. You know, if you were the king of the country and, you know, blowing up plots aside, how would you weed out stupidity?
Well, as I say, Guy Fawkes Night always gets rid of a few of them. But we always make... the trouble is we make such a fuss about it. When somebody does something stupid and takes themselves out of the gene pool, you know, Darwin Award style, everyone makes a terrible fuss like it's not fair. It's like, we're not going to run out of stupid people. They're not an endangered species. Yeah, in fact, we could do with less of them.
Yeah. I've often... it's often bothered me, this lowest common denominator thing. The new proposed referendum on MMP will, I think, will once again pander to the stupid.
It will, yes. Yeah. Yes. I'm very worried about that.
Yeah. Ooh, what should we do then?
Well, there's not much you can... Well, unless, of course, there's... the results of the referendum are not binding. They'll just ignore it like they ignore the last one.
No, they promised this one is binding.
No, this is a proper one.
Yeah, but the big problem is whether the question's going to be a workable question. Yes. A non-stupid question.
Yes. Do you think it's a good idea that we maybe should or maybe not ought to have MMP? And, yeah, get the whole thing confused again.
They need a third option, you know. It shouldn't be just yes or no for MMP. There should be, should we just refine MMP? Because I think a lot of people would go for that. It needs a, that threshold thing, the 1% thing, whatever. You know, the 1% that ACT, 1.5% that ACT got versus the 5% that other small parties have to get. Those, this threshold issue needs sorting out.
Yeah, I think people really have to face up to the fact that if you don't think MMP is a good idea, you probably shouldn't be voting. You really are too stupid to be allowed near a polling booth. For a small, calm, well-ordered country like New Zealand, something like MMP is a brilliant piece of constitutional change. It's something we needed. People saying, oh, but it makes things so unworkable. Well, good. Stopping a politician from doing things is like stopping a dog from chewing your wallet.
I like this idea, Alan. What if we have at the entrance to the polling booth, we have one of those little fence clips that sheep can't work out?
So, a slight intelligence test.
Yeah, so if the person can't open the gate, then they're not into the polling booth.
Yes, if they get confused and start weeping, it's like, go away now. You're not allowed to vote.
And maybe a pen with a sort of clicker on the top, so if you can't get the point of the pen out, then you know, there'll be just a few little intelligence tests.
That is a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that needs working on.
Yeah.
Yes. Keep dumb people out of polling booths. Yeah.
All right, so we might send you two away to work out some schemes to rate the intelligence of potential voters.
Yes.
And thank you very much again.
Vote Opinionated Islander, you know it makes sense.
Yeah, well, it'd be a good party to have. We could have the Opinionated Island. We could have all three islands that are going for. Well, how many islands? We could have four islands, shall we say. The coalition of four Opinionated Islands. Five.
Well, yes, the trouble
Barrier,
is,
the yeah,
Barrier, don't
so
want
six.
Anything, Barrier don't want anything to do with us, though.
Oh, but we could guess set them, right? We just need to fly over
invade
there.
Invade them. Yes.
Invade Barrier. There you
absolutely
go.
Absolutely. Force our opinions on them.
Dressed as Vikings.
Dressed as Vikings. Yeah. Yes, why not?
The Opinionated
Islanders. Fireworks.
The Opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone, joining us as they do the first Saturday of every month here on Island Life on Waiheke Radio. You're on Island Life here on Waiheke Radio. With me, I've got Paul Cohen, who's the coordinator of the Poison Free New Zealand campaign. How are you, Paul?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Okay, so you've been out and about, I suppose, causing a bit of trouble and ruckus around the place lately?
Well, I'm trying to sort out the trouble, I think, really. The poisoning of New Zealand, aerial dumping of toxic poisons, 1080 Bifidicum, set up a nationwide campaign to try and eradicate this appalling policy that they have of aerial dumping of toxic poisons, and we've got currently 13 venues around New Zealand that are going to do their protest on the
Sunday the 15th of November, so that's coming up next weekend. And what's happening here on Waiheke?
We start off down by the post office, walking up High Street on Iroa High Street, congregate here on Artworks, and there's going to be the launch of the video part of the music for Enough is Enough, which is our protest song that was created for this occasion.
And so you've got drumming. You sure about that?
We've got drumming. We've got drumming walking up the High Street. We've got live music as well. There'll be quite a few people coming here to play some live music. So it'll be a protest and a party at the end.
Excellent. Now, you've got a message. You want to say it with a song. And you've got the song that's written, Enough is Enough. So
Enough is Enough.
Who's put this together?
The lyrics came from a poem that I wrote in protest to the aerial dumping of toxic poisons. Katie Soljak changed the lyrics. Billy TK Senior wrote the music for it. We've got Caitlin Smith, Nick Stevens, Mel Davis, Sarah Moa Ati. We've got some choir people. It's a collaboration of New Zealand artists created here on the island at Gala Studios.
Okay, and we're going to now have the worldwide debut of
Absolutely.
This song.
On Waiheke Island.
Fantastic. And this is going to be used around the country, this song, is it?
Absolutely. It's going out to all radio stations later on today.
Brilliant. Okay, here we go. This is the world debut of Enough is Enough. Have they got a collection? Have they given themselves a name, all of these people?
No.
Okay. This is Enough is Enough by some people.
Yeah.
Okay, take a listen, folks.
You tried to deny that you got it wrong, and that is why we have to sing this song. We'll be standing hand in hand to protect the sacred land.
Talk now to Daughter from the Waiheke Waste Resource Trust. And how are you?
Good. I'm great. How are you?
Oh, very good. So you've been pretty busy. You've had the big month of Junk to Funk and all the rest of it.
Oh yes, indeed. It's been a month since it was on. So I've had a nice month of less work, which was really, really good. It was very successful, and a lot of work went into it. But it's nice to have it done for the year, another year done.
Yeah, and were you pleased with it? You thought it lived up to the high standard of previous years?
I think so. I had a wonderful time. I think we had as many entries as 2007, so we can only go up from there next year. We had heaps and heaps of wonderful people involved, like we always do, and I think it was a huge success.
And are you getting the adult entrants? Because I know in the past, you know, there was a kind of a trend towards lots of younger entrants and not so many of the adults.
Yeah, sure. There's still probably more children than adults. But when adults do come in, they are very, very clever. And I think next year we'll probably try and we might try and change the format of the construction clubs and maybe even make them events in themselves. And I hope that that way we'll get a lot more adult entries as well.
Yeah, good stuff. And, you know, you're not resting on your laurels and going, okay, that's it, we'll just wait until Junk Defunct next year. You've got plenty planned as well and plenty
that's
still
right.
going on.
Yeah, we have. We're working on a few things. As John would say, our space for working and waste has been somewhat diminished by the fact that TPI now has the contract for the waste services on the island, but it hasn't completely vanished. So we're doing a few things. We've picked up some contracting work. We've written a couple of reports on various waste issues. We are going to do some waste auditing, which will be interesting. So going into some organisations and measuring what they're producing in terms of waste and figuring out how they can reduce that. We are also, what's very exciting about what, and John has been working on this mostly, and I should be picking it up soon, is community-owned energy and trying to apply what we learned in waste to energy. And it's actually really, really interesting, and there's a lot of parallels. So we should be coming up with some really exciting things for the island. We've been running a couple of events, community engagements. The last few weeks we've had somebody come and talk about waste to energy. We've got something happening on Monday which is about wind energy, and we'll be looking at the ways that, you know, Waihikians can reduce their reliance on energy and maybe even some energy creation as well.
And how's the food waste study going?
Right, well, the food waste, I'm going away next week for 3 weeks. I'm going to go visit a whole lot of community organisations around the country, and then when I get back we should be starting the food waste project. So what we'll be looking for is people who are interested in taking part, and probably a 6 week long project where you'll be learning about food waste, different aspects of how to reduce it, and also measuring what you are wasting, and hopefully by the end of the 6 weeks seeing a dramatic change, a decrease in the amount of food waste you're producing.
And I suppose you've picked the most difficult time of the year to do that, being over Christmas when there's probably more food waste.
More food waste than ever before.
Yeah.
That's right. But that's a good time to do it. There's lots of really important things that, you know, Christmas brings, and it's a really good time, I think, to look at how families can reduce their waste. Because Christmas often ends up being very wasteful, doesn't it?
It does, unfortunately. It reminds me of a study I read about years and years ago that was someone was digging up landfills, and they got to this, you know, and this kind of, you can dig through landfills and it's historical. You get all these layers and you can see what people buried year by year. And they got to this year and there was a lot of meat. And when they tracked it back and you could find the newspapers and so on to figure out when this was, it was a year when there was a shortage of meat and the prices had gone up. And what seemed to be happening was that people were stockpiling stuff when it was on special, and then it was being wasted and being thrown out, so they actually ended up with an increase in waste.
Oh, my goodness. Wow, how interesting.
So okay, you're going to have a lot of fun digging through. Are you going to be doing that, like rummaging through all the bags and seeing what's in there?
Well, it's only going to be food waste, so we'll probably, you know, get people to measure it on a daily basis. It's not going to be hugely scientifically accurate or anything. I just want people to get some idea of what they produce by measuring it on some kitchen scales, probably on a daily basis. And we expect that, you know, some families will have heaps and some will have very little. It's actually really interesting how little people think they have and how much they actually produce.
Good stuff. So that's Daughter Ray from the Waste Resource Trust talking rubbish with us here on Island Life Waiheke Radio. I've got Rebecca with me from the Coast Guard, and we'll just pull you up to the microphone there, Rebecca. So you can, clatter, clatter. That's what happens when you have community radio. Things clatter and bang, and it's all part of the fun. Okay, good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Good. Now, you've got, what's your official role there within the Coast Guard? You're the head honcho almost, aren't you?
I am indeed. I'm the president now. I'm newly elected and have no idea what I'm doing.
Well, that's reassuring. So what is involved with being president? Well, you don't know, but what do you think might be involved with being president of the Waiheke Coast Guard?
So far, there's a lot of admin work, and it's sort of the behind-the-scenes stuff, so meeting with the other Coast Guard units in town, organising meetings, and sort of being the main contact person for the unit, really.
Right, and you're also involved out on the water and doing all the exciting stuff?
Yep, absolutely. I'm still a crew member and everything as well. We don't have a boat at the moment. We're expecting our new boat in December. We sold the old boat, and we're having a custom-made boat due in December or thereabouts, which would be great. It would be much more suitable for our needs on Waiheke.
So what happens in the meantime? You're out on the boogie boards?
Try not to, no. In the meantime, we're concentrating on our training and a lot of our fundraising to do with the new boat, and we're still on call as such. We've still got pages, and when Coast Guard need us, we do land-based work to assist the crews that are out in the water.
Okay, so that's good. It's reassuring that things are still going on. And when you get your new boat, there'll be a period, I suppose, of transition when you get used to it all and that, won't there?
Yeah, we're expecting 6 weeks from when we get the boat, so we're thinking probably through till the mid-January, end of January, sometime around then.
And I imagine you're also on the hunt for some money to pay for the thing.
Absolutely. We're always on the hunt for money. Yeah, so anyone who'd like to make a donation, please do so.
What would this new boat allow you to do that you couldn't do in the past?
It's a jet boat, so we're looking at being able to do a lot more inshore stuff. When we're doing searches, we often need to go closer inshore to have a look, and particularly with the shores around Waiheke, that was really difficult with the outboards because we could only go so far. So the jet unit would allow us to go a lot closer to shore, but it's also a more rugged boat. It's an aluminium boat, and it's a bit bigger, so we can actually spend longer time on the water and take more people should we need to during rescues.
And I imagine a lot of your work is around the rocks, isn't it? I mean, there was that case a couple of weeks ago of those people who I still couldn't get over the fact, really. What did they do? That their boat overturned, they swam ashore, and then they went home.
Yep, absolutely. I was involved with that one. They that was actually quite a big search and quite scary in that we didn't know when the boat had turned over. We didn't know if anyone was underneath it or anything like that. It involved three Coast Guard boats, myself, a lot of phone calls, public were out there looking as well. It was quite a big rescue and lasted a number of hours, and it turned out that the people had actually just gone home.
Which is remarkable, but, I mean, let's be generous. Maybe they didn't know what to do. What do you do? Your boat's overturned. I mean, I don't know, I still can't figure it out. The boat's just floating around out there and you're watching TV and having a beer, or I don't know.
Particularly in cases where someone might actually see like an overturned boat and think, oh my gosh, and call Coast Guard. It would be really helpful if you could call Coast Guard. So that's just 303 1303 or star 500 if you've got a cell phone. And just let them know, you know, you're safe, you're home, your boat's overturned and it's floating wherever it's floating. Because our main concern is life, so we're more concerned about people, but also a boat that's floating around that's still, you know, able to move within a bay actually becomes a navigational hazard as well. So where we can help out, we do help out, and it's nice to know that someone isn't under it when we're doing that.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, well, thanks very much for popping in, Rebecca, and the Coast Guard are going to become a regular feature of what we do here on Island Life. We're going to start doing a monthly series of water safety and boat safety tips from courtesy of the Waiheke Coast Guard, so it's nice to have you on board.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.